Auckland Grey Power is pleased to sponsor this edition of Senior Focus.
Welcome to our focus on transport issues today. And my name's Richard Barter, and I'm looking forward to the next 30 minutes with you. Today we're going to not have a person that we're going to interview. I've been working on a paper for a couple of conferences, and you know, it's always good, and I hope you don't mind, figuring out your thoughts. Speaking them out is often a good way to clarify them and to bring them into life. So the topic that I'm speaking about is, what are the things that drivers are thinking about when they're driving? And what are the things that might prevent them being aware of things that are happening around them, particularly cyclists? We have talked quite a lot about cycling on this program, and we're going to talk a little more about it today. Last year, about this time last year, I was in Copenhagen in Denmark, which is a cycling city. A large percentage of the population cycle to work, cycle for transport, don't have cars. And Copenhagen has wonderful infrastructure for cycling. A typical road will have a couple of traffic lanes. There may or may not be parking. There probably actually isn't parking on the road. We get used to the idea of being able to park on our roads. It's not the case in many places. The next thing you'll see is a couple of cycle lanes, which are separated by curbs, and then the footpaths, and then very often, it's actually the buildings, go straight up from the footpaths, unlike New Zealand, where your typical urban road or where people live will have a garden in the front. So it's very clear who goes where. Cars on the road, cyclists in the cycle lane, and pedestrians on the footpaths. And in fact, I remember pedalling clearly, following a friend who was a local. He was going at quite a clip through the busy centre of town. The road was jammed, packed with cars. The footpaths were jam-packed with people. The cycleway, there were plenty of cyclists on it, but it was nice and clear, and that's where there was plenty of opportunity to keep up the pace. The pedestrians didn't step onto the footpath without looking, and cyclists were obviously very aware of what was going on. On one occasion, I was pedalling into town following a woman on her bicycle, and we were passed by a car, a motorist, who turned right. Remember, he was driving on the right-hand side of the road, so when he turns right, it's a bit like if we turn left here. And he went straight into the woman in front of me on the bicycle. And she was knocked off. I saw her sitting up. I don't think she was badly injured, but he definitely turned right and drove straight into her. Now, that was a country where one would think a motorist was expecting a cyclist to be there, and yet this happened. And so it prompted a train of thought which I've stuck with and have been reviewing and researching over the intervening months, and developed quite an interest in, well, if it happened to her, could that happen to me? And if it could happen to me, well, then what do I need to do to avoid that sort of situation? And at the end of the day, in a crash like that, it doesn't really matter who's right and who's wrong. I'm going to be the one that's going to come off worst. So this has prompted a line of research, and in fact, I'm hoping to be able to present this at a conference in Barcelona in October, and I've had the privilege of working with a professor at the University of Waikato who specialises in psychology and road safety, and we're working on this together. So there's some quite sort of scary statistics out there as far as that cyclists should know about. And people have been looking at this for some time, and I've had the opportunity to look at a lot of papers that cover off different aspects to this topic. One group have said that based on their experiments using eye tracking technology, and this research was done by an insurance company, more than one in five cyclists go unseen by motorists on the road. Can you imagine that? So a fifth of cyclists, well, a fifth of the time that a motorist encounters a cyclist, they're not actually seen. And there's all sorts of factors that come into play here. Certainly, I mentioned Copenhagen, where there's an awful lot of people who cycle. There, by and large, if you're driving, you will expect cyclists to be all around you. So if you're going to make a turn, well, you're probably going to not only look in your mirrors, but you know where to look, because in a country like Denmark, and it's the same with Holland and Germany and a lot of the Northern European countries, there's a very good system of cycling infrastructure, paths, and you know where the cyclists are going to be because they're going to be on the paths, intersections are all the same, and so you know where they're going to be. In a country like New Zealand, it's not the case. We have very few well-set-up networks of cycle paths, and so the cyclist could be anywhere. Additionally, there are very few who cycle in New Zealand, and so your average driver will not be expecting to see a cyclist. Now, that's a big issue, because one of the other things that happens when people are driving is that they are kind of continually making an assessment as to whether to pull out, when to turn, when to change lane. And they are scanning the road. And when you actually look at something, or your eyes, when you're looking at something, only a very small part of your vision is actually in focus, something like 2 to 3 degrees. The rest of it is not in focus, and you can't actually accurately work out what's happening. A lot of things you're familiar with a lot of surroundings, and so in a room, your living room, for instance, while your TV might be right out on the periphery of your vision, you know it's there, and so there's this sort of object on one side of your vision, you know it's your TV. We also overcome this by turning our eyes and turning our head, and that way we know what's happening around us. The challenge is out on the road is that we are often in unfamiliar areas, and so things around us are not familiar, and so we need to be looking at them if we're going to figure out what they are. Now, when we're driving, we're making an assessment, as I said earlier, about what's coming up. And so a big truck approaching from the right as you're waiting at an intersection, you can see that out of the corner of your eye, and your subconscious knows that that's a big truck, and so it gets your attention. You know that if you pulled out in front of a big truck, the outcome's not going to be great for you. And so that sort of locked in that you wait, or you make an assessment as to how far away it is, and you pull out in plenty of time to be safely on your way. The problem with small things like cyclists, and to a lesser degree motorcyclists, is that they don't pose the same level of threat. And at a subconscious level, you can quite easily not actually see them. I was riding home, and I think I've told this story before, along Dominion Road, one of the main arterials in Auckland, one evening. It was dark, but it was a clear night, great street lighting. I had a couple of bright lights on my bicycle, and there was a big black ute stopped at a give way as I was coming up to this ute. It had tinted windows, and so I couldn't see the driver. I wasn't convinced, I didn't know for sure, that he had seen me and was going to wait. So as I came up to him, I actually stopped before he might drive out. And in fact, he did drive out. He didn't see me. He got a very big fright when he realised that had I carried on, he would have run over me, and he apologised. What he was doing, he was looking down the road for cars. He wasn't thinking that right in front of him there could be a bicycle. And so this is a big issue. And of course, coming back to the problem of only a small amount of our vision is actually what we're consciously kind of working out. We can see it if it in front of us. If, for instance, someone has a stiff neck or difficulty with their eyesight, you know, we've got, in effect, I think that was very likely the case of the accident I mentioned in Copenhagen. The fellow driving was an older fellow, and I think he just wasn't able to turn his head to see the fact that there were cyclists coming down on his inside. And so these are other issues that cyclists really need to know about. People of different ages, young people, process things differently. And we've talked before about the issues of distraction. We know that the various screens that we have today, our tablets, our phones, things on the car dash, all can distract us. We know that tiredness, fatigue is a huge issue on our, in fact, many would say that it has a bigger issue than alcohol in terms of the cause of distractions. We've talked before about even legal prescription drugs and the effect that they can have on us. And of course, stress, being distracted, thinking about something, all can take our attention away from what's happening out on the road there. And then there are a lot of things that actually stop us seeing. We mentioned the fact that my ride down Dominion Road was at night time. Sunstrike, rain, mist, low light. Every vehicle has a different setup in terms of blind zones, the pillars, the A pillar in front of you, where the mirrors are. A lot of these things can actually block the view of other road users. So what can we do about this? Well, as a driver, knowing about this, being aware about this, it can prompt us to really think about continually paying attention, I guess, to what's happening around us as we drive. Being aware of the things that can potentially distract us. There are some great little apps for phones these days which can effectively turn them off and stop notifications happening. We can expect, we can think every intersection, every time I'm going to turn, change direction, what could be there, even if we can't see it, what could be there. We can look twice. When I pull out of an intersection, I'll look once either way, and then a second later, if once I've started moving, I'll look again, because I know that that motorbike could be in the door frame, and a second later, if I look again, I might see them. So there's lots of things we can do. We can make sure we drive when we're well rested. We can attempt to address the issues that might cause stress. And I guess it goes without saying, drugs and alcohol are things that we know that these things are going to affect our ability to see things on the road. There's another whole area that I'm going to look at, but before I do that, I'd like to have a little break, and we're going to listen to Bob Brookmeyer play In a Sentimental Mood. Well, isn't that a lovely, lovely track? In a Sentimental Mood by Bob Brookmeyer. And that's on a CD called Late Night Jazz, one of my favourites. So we've been talking about things that can happen, situations that can prevent us as drivers seeing other things out on the road when we're driving. Now, when we come back to vulnerable road users, cyclists and pedestrians, there's another factor here which may not have occurred to many of us. Now, our roads are designed largely for cars and for driving around on. And so when we're on the road, we are obeying the road rules. We are doing what drivers do. And we position ourselves on the road according to the road lanes. We stop at give way signs, stop signs, traffic lights. We turn into the right place. We go around roundabouts, anti-clockwise. Clockwise. We do the things that we do on the road. Now, the problem with cyclists is that, as you know, as you will have seen, they are often a bit random. They're not cars, and they will often do unpredictable things, and they will sometimes do things which aren't acceptable in terms of the road code. And when we see this, and the example that comes up all the time, of course, is cyclists go through red lights. That leaves a big impression on us, and our sense of order, our sense of what is right, is challenged. And that can create a kind of almost a permanent lasting little blip in our worldview, which can actually be applied every time we see a cyclist. We remember that incident where someone stepped out of line. And of course, you know, the same happens when we get a fright from another car or a driver that perhaps didn't give way, and you know, we may have had a near miss or worse. You know, those things stick in our mind. The problem with the incidents that we observe and then remember and then tuck away with cyclists is that we can develop and when I say this, it's not, you know, I'm looking at research where people have, you know, interviewed hundreds and thousands of people, and it's not just something that's kind of a random thought. But we can develop this situation where there's a sense that cyclists don't belong, and arguably in many road environments, I probably wouldn't disagree. But the problem is that thinking can actually prevent us seeing them, because we think that they shouldn't be there. And so while we can look, a cyclist is not always part of our idea of what a road should be, and so we don't see them. And this is one of the big challenges that road safety professionals face. Interestingly, that sense of ownership can be different for people who drive different types of cars. And some would say that the bigger the car, the greater the sense of ownership, and this can be exacerbated. The reason I mention this is not that in any way I'm wanting to criticise drivers. I'm a driver. I have a car, and I'm absolutely prone to all of these things. But cyclists need to understand this. And so over the last 5 or 6 years, I've managed the Share the Road campaign, and we've developed a number of messages for cyclists which, in our opinion, and we've tested this and we've had almost 700 or 800 cyclists through our workshops, and a lot of those messages are based on what we've asked drivers to share in terms of what we would like to say to cyclists. And really they come down to these three things: keep control of your bike in the situation, ride to be seen and be predictable, and lastly, choose safe routes. Now, these things are, they sound simple. Taken together, they actually can prevent a lot of bad stuff happening. Being able to see around you, being able to ride at a speed that is, that enables you to stop or change direction quickly if you have to. Riding out from the curb, out from parked cars, so that you don't have to suddenly swerve to avoid a door opening. Signalling clearly where you're going, and choosing safe routes can go an awful long way to overcoming some of those potential problems of simply not being seen. So what does this mean for your average cyclist? Well, it's a bit of a challenge, really, because we often say in our workshops, you really need to act like a car. And that can be a problem for a cyclist who thinks, well, why should I? You know, I have a bicycle, I ride within the road code, but why should I kind of be pushed down by the system which is dominated by cars? Well, you know, my answer is pretty simple, really, and that's if you want to get around without accidents, you know, these things are going to make a difference. And I'm just going to sort of, as we draw this to a close, the professor that I'm working with in Waikato has done a lot of work in this area called positive psychology. And essentially what it means is that if you take an interest in something, if you look at a situation positively, then you're going to be engaged, you're going to notice things, you're going to actually have a good time. And in the case of a cyclist out on the road, by saying hello, by waving, by engaging, by smiling to the other motorists with you, then you're going to have a good time and the interaction is going to be a good one. So how's that? Cyclists, drivers, we need to get on out there. Hey, it's been great talking to you today. Send me a text, 021-277-1213. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you for your time. Bye-bye for now.
Get together with Senior Focus next Sunday at 5:25 p.m. on Planet FM 104.6, or listen online at any time at planetaudio.org.nz/Senior Focus. And do note, Senior Focus is one word.